why don't we go ahead and get started, and hopefully Paula and Mark will be able to join us shortly. But I know that time is of the essence. It's busy, busy. So also, just so we can go around for the purposes of the recording, could everyone just state their name and which organization they are with that's on the phone right now?
Jim Hanafy, Department of Assistive and Rehabilitative Services.
Bill Carpenter, Department of State Health Services.
Sherry Jackson, Department of State Health Services.
And I am Ashley Schweikar with the Texas Department of Housing and Community Affairs. And all right, let's get started. So in terms of the old business, I know it was almost a month ago now, about a month ago, that we had our last service committee conference call. But there were two items from that call that required some follow-up work. The first one was that there was discussion on how to make a recommendation on integration. And basically what I think we came up with at the last call a month ago was that it would be somewhat of a vision statement, if you will, about what the council would like to put. And so the document that I created for you all, that it was one of the handouts in the email, I called it the Integration Vision Statement. And I basically what I did is I used some of the language that we had already talked about previously and added some of the feedback that we have received from our from those who have provided public input during the last two council meetings. So I wanted to see how people felt about this as the integration vision statement, if there were any changes or additions to that statement.
This is Jim. I thought this was extremely well balanced. And so I mean, I like it.
Okay, great, thank you.
I thought it was well written as well, Ashley, and the provision for the step-down option was nice. That gives consumers or individuals, you know, the chance to you know, attempt more and more integration or independence. I like that.
All right, great. So. I'll also, you know, make sure I don't get any emails from those who couldn't make it on the phone. But I think if there are any changes, we'll stick with this this language then for putting into the biennial plan. Okay, great. The next thing on the old business was the last meeting we talked a little bit about recovery-oriented systems of care. Bill actually brought it up in terms of thinking about local providers who are working with their coalition of care, continuum of care partners, which are the major homeless service providers, working with them and working with service providers and also trying to reach out to housing providers and bring all those organizations together to serve specifically persons who have mental illness and or substance abuse disorders. And so I thought that we should maybe look further into recovery-oriented systems of care and possibly make some recommendations in our biennial plan about them. So what I have as a handout that was provided to you guys by email is basically just I gave some background about what recovery-oriented systems of care are, what their goals are, and then I also provided something that Bill had done, which he had posed a question by email to the local ROSCs, basically asking them how is housing a component in what they're doing for persons who are trying to enter into or maintain recovery. and then how the ROSC is directing services for this population. And we received, you know, a decent amount of providers gave us feedback. We have Houston, East Texas, Wichita Falls, Gulf Coast, and then the Coastal Bend, Corpus Christi area all provided some feedback to Bill, and he forwarded that on to me. Do we have someone join us just now?
This is Mark Holt from DADS.
Hi, Mark.
Hey.
We're talking about the recovery-oriented systems of care information.
Okay.
And so basically I wanted to provide this as kind of a first step in for all of us to familiarize ourselves with what they are and see how, I mean, I think that they definitely fit into the type of thing that the council is trying to promote in terms of they're trying to facilitate partnerships across multiple different types of local providers. So those could be health providers, housing providers, transportation, education, criminal justice, child welfare. But I think that that whole cross-system partnership is something that this council was created to promote, and I think is interested in continuing to promote. So I'm wondering how, you know, if there's a way for us to make any type of recommendations about the recovery-oriented systems of care, maybe about how, you know, how they can get connected to the right local providers. I don't know how many of them currently converse with their local public housing authorities or perhaps their local aging and disability resource centers if they're available in those areas. That might be something to look into, but I wanted to open it up to everyone to see how we felt about moving forward with a recommendation on ROSCs.
Well, I think it's extremely valuable to have the housing component with persons who are in the recovery process. You know, without housing, you know, it makes recovery just so much more difficult. And I know that the ROSCs are kind of in a different periods of growth. Maybe Sherry, you can help me explain that better.
Okay.
Houston, I think, has been meeting for over a year, but some places 2 years. Some places are kind of new. I don't know if you could kind of give us some insight into that.
Well, we have approximately 28 local loss communities, and some of them fall kind of regionally, where there's like Rio Grande Valley.
Mm-hmm.
There are Edinburgh, McAllen, Brownsville, and Laredo under Rio Grande Valley.
Okay.
So, but they all except Houston, which began about 2 years ago, has been operating, and they have really a lot of momentum and support behind them within the community and the local government. The others are fairly new and are developing, and we are providing technical assistance to them at the state level and have also hired a consultant to help us work with them as well. But in looking at the spreadsheet where I see that where contact was made with the local ROS in some areas where it says plan to invite local coalition,
mm-hmm.
if you just give them the contact information, don't wait for them to invite you, call them, say, I'm interested, and just show up at the meeting. It's not an invitational thing. It's anybody who wants to come and help support. And you just call them and see when the next meeting is and just come on.
I know I entered this conversation late, but could you give me a 2 or 3 minute synopsis of what these are? I'm not even sure I know what ROSC is.
A recovery-oriented system of care. It is looking at substance abuse as a chronic disease. And as with chronic disease, you just don't treat the problem. You got to treat, you know, the whole person and whatever goes with them. And that's what the ROS communities are looking at and developing.
Are they like coordinating resource groups, or are they have a function unto themselves other than just coordinating activities?
Right now, they are coordinating a network of service providers that includes community and faith-based and governmental entities, local governmental entities.
And do they provide like a systematic access form, and they perform like information referral systems, or are they
haven't gotten there yet.
Haven't gotten there yet. Okay, so they're really working as our CRCG type of model. They're not performing as other sort. They're not quite like our aging resource and disability centers, although that's probably what they will ultimately approximate. But thank you for that.
And, you know, so I think yeah, these, it sounds like these ROSCs, they're still kind of developing. They're still, I guess, formulating, adding relationships to other partners. And I think that one of the things that we have really championed with the 2010-2011 biennial plan, that the cross-agency committee was making recommendations as to ways of building up these local organizations that have a mission of partnering to assist persons with disabilities. And so I think that, you know, maybe it makes sense for us to make some recommendations as to, given that these ROICs are still in their infancy, how should they progress in a way that will best serve the population that needs the help?
And that's what they're meaning. And those groups look at, that they have work groups within their local ROC that look at what their needs of the community are for substance use disorder clients and co-occurring clients, and looking at resources, treatment, policy, and these are some of the work groups where they look at that can help in developing our best coordinated services for those populations.
That's great, and I think that's such a needed thing for this population. I'm just wondering how we, you know, as a council can think about maybe more broadly how the different local, you know, information and referral networks, such as the Aging and Disability Resource Centers or the Area Agencies on Aging, how the local service networks, such as the local mental health authorities, how all these kind of disparate components can somehow be supportive of recovery-oriented systems of care. And I just wanted to put that out there because I think that it sounds like this is a great approach, and you know, needs to get that support of those other local organizations that are probably serving an overlapping population, and figuring out ways in which we can make sure that those linkages happen, or to help those linkages happen, you know, what could we recommend?
Well, I think you said it pretty well, and Sherry, you can add to this, but there are all those overlapping populations, and I think that one, you know, entity or organization, you know, needs a kind of a collaborative effort to treat the whole person, and the ROSC is one, the participants in the ROSC is a component of kind of collaborating and making sure that there's the overlapping of services, not just, you know, the overlapping of need.
Very well said.
So
I'm not sure how I'm not sure how the council can support that other than, you know, just you know, raising awareness that the services are available for, you know, the populations that are served in order to kind of promote recovery, which promotes independence, which promotes wellness, et cetera.
Yeah, and I just want to say, I mean, if you're talking about the Area Agencies on Aging or the Aging and Disability Resource Centers, and I'll use the acronyms AAAs and ADRCs from this point forward. There are about specific, the AAAs are about benefits counseling and information about services for individuals over the age of 60 on a broad band. There's a little bit of money there from the Older Americans Act, and there's not a lot of money, and they do things like Meals and Wheels and that sort of activity, fall prevention. The ADRC is more of an information and referral source system, and that's sort of a coordination. And the local mental health authorities should already be part of our 14 ADRCs. They're not statewide at this point, but that's their function. Sounds to me, other than being aware that these ROSCs are available as part of a system, that these are, you know, this is a one more place to go to if you have a specific issue. It's not really about a service delivery system per se, what the AAAs or the ADRCs are doing. It's getting people to specific services that have already been appropriated. Does that make sense? I mean, it sounds like me from the ROSC, you have a very distinct mission of getting individuals to recovery. Now, there's other additional supportive services that people have dual diagnoses may need, including housing, and that's an important part. But if you're talking about the service system that's coming from DADS, for example, those would be those additional sort of supports for activities of daily living. Does that make any sense?
Go ahead, Sherry.
Let me just kind of say this, and maybe that, and I'll just kind of maybe add some additional information or clarify some things. But the ROSCs in their partnerships and in bringing in other service providers are looking at providing a network of service providers. And at some point, based upon the healthcare environment and the changes that are going on, and from what we can see, is that this is going to be part of healthcare reform, where you're going to have to treat the whole person, and you're going to have a system in place to address that. And they were developed in preparation for that. So the faith-based communities, using peers, using individuals who have an interest in helping people in recovery, are all part of that.
So, Sherry, are you saying that even though the recovery-oriented systems of care has a particular, I guess, framework in which it's viewing the way that somebody goes through recovery, that the local ROSCs are trying to figure out who those community-based service partners are in the community and hooking up with them at this time, trying to figure out how to reach out to them and bring them in?
And to form as they develop, a plan on how they can provide that continuum of service without people falling through the cracks and addressing their whole and all their holistic and other needs. So that's what they're looking at.
Well, I guess what I suggest is that the ROSC, certainly there's an ADRC in their catchment area, that they contact the people in charge at the ADRC to see either they're a partner at the table. Again, the local mental health authority should already be there.
They've been invited too.
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's certainly something that I would make that outreach and contact to. But I guess what I'm suggesting, at least at this time, it's not like the ADRC is developing a service plan for any one particular individual. They're looking at making sure that services are coordinated and making sure that individuals know of all the services that are available out in their community.
Sure.
It's just not making sure that they know, but also ensuring that they access those services through the...
Well, and I think that is where there may be a little disconnect here, is that they don't they don't perform case management type of activities per se. They lead people to the programs that perform those case management activities.
But you say they don't. You're speaking of
the ADRC.
Oh, okay.
But I see that it makes sense that the ADRCs, as their mission is to be, you know, the single point of entry into, getting the services that somebody needs to make sure that they don't fall through the cracks. That, you know, the ADRCs are kind of the intake point to say, you know, here is how you get connected to everything else, and if the recovery-oriented systems of care are kind of saying, here is how we create individualized recovery plans or systems. And so it seems like, you know, it could flow from somebody coming into an ADRC and then getting referred to an ROSC. Is that something that makes sense?
They could, I mean, at this point in time, the goal of an ADRC being truly a single point of entry, that's still out in the future. I mean, okay. Right now they're at the level where they're coordinating activities, but people don't have to go to an ADRC to enter the system. That's not a requirement this time. It's kind of out there. It's like a 2-1-1 system, but more robust in terms of the focus just on the long-term service and support system. So someone could call an ADRC and know different activities, and they could be referred to an ROSC if they knew about them and what they offer someone. But it's not like they're developing, they're not like the true entry point in terms of setting up a service plan and making sure that all the activities are coordinated under a singular service plan. Again, am I making a, I mean, I may be giving you a nuanced discussion, but that's how it actually works. So an individual who ultimately needs, let's say, Star Plus type of services, they'll go to that portal. They'll say, okay, you need to go to the Star Plus support unit, and then you'll enter the Star Plus system over there. But they're not going to say, oh, gee, you need mental health services. We're going to also coordinate you with the local mental health authority. That'd be something that the Star Plus service coordinator would be doing. So, does that make sense?
Yes, it does.
Okay. I'm not saying it's not a valuable resource, the ROSC, to be for the ADRC not to know about the ROSC going on. I think that's an important piece of information for them to be aware of. It's not going to function as this sort of establishment towards recovery for a single person.
Hi, this is Laura. I just got here, and I'm hoping I kind of understand a little bit about what's going on. But I'm not sure if the thing with the ROSC is it's not necessarily a place where you would refer to. It would be something that we would like y'all to be a part of. And when you're there, you understand how everybody's interacting and what services they provide. So you're more of a community networking. And then when you do have those clients who need services, you know where to send them or who has what services. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense to me because I started this conversation since you just got on by saying this sounds like a CRCG model. If you're familiar with that, community resource coordinating group model, it's an old.
Heard of.
Yeah, so it sounds like it's that type of model where you would want then that HHSC to be part of your local or regular type of meetings on the ROSC. And we have this in the for people relocating nursing facility, we call them community transition teams, where we get the local public. Housing Authority, Adult Protective Services, the local mental health authority, and a variety of different partners. They meet like on a monthly basis, talk about barriers to relocation in the community, and they work issues out. And sometimes they actually work on a particular case. And we have this case, at least that's how it started off with, and who has the resources to help this person out, transportation, this, that, whatever the needs were. So it sounds more like that type of model where you would want to invite then either a representative from the ADRC to be there or specifically specific agency types.
Okay.
We'd like for them to be involved there. And as I said, as the, we have the list of all of the local Roths, it's not an invitational thing. Anybody that wants to come, and we're asking just to spread the word and let people know who those contacts are and just call and attend their meeting.
Yeah, it sounds very much like our community transition champs. It's the same way, and we encourage people, we invite people, but anybody can come, and we actually also encourage for-profit organizations to show up, not-for-profit organizations show up. I mean, we're really looking faith-based. I mean, we're looking for the community at large to come together and determine what sort of service and supports are there to support a particular individual or issue. So it sounds very much like that sort of model that we use.
And Sherry and Laura, just so that you understand, that the Housing and Health Services Coordination Council, you know, we're a statewide body that's, you know, interagency as well as governor appointees, and that you know, we are one of the things that we've been tasked with by state statute is to figure out ways of overcoming barriers to persons with disabilities providing, getting the provision of affordable housing with linkages to appropriate services and supports. And so we're one of the barriers that we have identified sometimes can be just the coordination, both at the state level and at the local level, of housing entities and service entities with one another. And so that's why when this came up, when Bill, you know, mentioned it at our last conference call, this committee, I thought that it would be a good, you know, way of discussing how, you know, how at the local level can the ROSCs play a part in overcoming those barriers to coordination. And it sounds like that's definitely the mission of the fees. And I think that, you know, Mark is absolutely right that, you know, it's about inviting the representatives from those local agencies to the table or telling them, go talk to your local ROSC. And be proactive. One thing, though, that, you know, sometimes I think not everyone knows is that while there are lots of local intake offices of the local of the state service agencies, the state housing agency does not have that kind of local network. Like TDHCA, the Texas Department of Housing, does not have local offices across the state. Because housing funding does not exactly work in a centralized way, where we have the one pot of money that it gets dispersed throughout the state. So, you know, one thing that I think could be mentioned in the biennial plan regarding this type of local partnership building is that public housing authorities would likely be that local component on the housing side to really bring into the ROSCs.
Yes, but also at the state level, we have the Texas Recovery Initiative and state agencies and some federal departments, federal probation, Texas Department of Criminal Justice. They are involved in the Texas Recovery Initiative, which is statewide and basically kind of like, you know, policy making and can basically give guidance and make decisions. So I'd like to invite you to that meeting for the state, at the statewide, state level.
Are you saying invite a representative of the council or invite a representative of my agency?
Agency.
My agency, okay. Well, that's something that we can definitely look into. Are there any other comments by the council members on how we could, if we want to, discuss ROSCs in the biennial plan?
I don't know, I kind of struggle with, I see the fit and then I see the non-fit. I think it has relevance to especially the piece related to barriers as you were discussing. So you know, it was interesting because I went back, and I reread Our Purpose and Your Purpose, and this seems to fit in line with what we're expected to do. So that's kind of where I support it, identifying this in the plan. I don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think that perhaps we're just identifying, a new player that we didn't know about before, and when we created our last biennial plan, as a new player on the local level that can facilitate these cross-system partnerships, and to say that this group is definitely something that's needed on the local level to make sure that we have that continuum of services as well as that connection of services to housing. So maybe that's the way that we approach the language.
Yeah, the word.
Well, yeah. As I look at our second bullet and 2, 3, fourth bullet, or third bullet, you know, it kind of fits in there in terms of the barriers as was identified in some of these reports, but then also cross education and resources. So, I mean, I think it has a place.
Okay. Great.
Again, just real quick, you know, Sherry mentioned about the healthcare environment changing, and I think as we look at that more, it's really going to be important that we do have as many partnerships with all these areas, that we are all working together and can show that collaboration, because I think for funding issues, that might be important for everybody in the future.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you that it's seeming more and more like the federal government and the way that they're crafting funding opportunities is crafting them around collaboration, cross-sector collaboration. I mean, we certainly, in our partnership with the Department of Aging and Disability Services, have seen that, haven't we, Mark?
Yes, we have. And that's a good thing.
Yes, it's a good thing. But I agree with you, Laura, that that's definitely something to point out in our language.
And not just in collaboration, but in as far as performance and ensuring that client services are needed, that clients are met, and clients are treated and well. So when we look at it, you know, we look at the treatment. If a person goes to treatment and they relapse, and then they get out, and they relapse, and then they get out, which is a drain on the funds in the system. So that's why we look at the ROS as being that continuum where there are services in that continuum that will help support that person to help them avoid those relapse and reentering treatment. So that's kind of what we look at when we look at the ROS.
Okay.
And as we mentioned, you know, we get block grant funding, and we're looking at changes in the way that those funds are going to be authorized to us.
Right, by SAMHSA, correct? All right. Yeah, I see what you're saying there. And it's true. We have a lot of the traditional entitlement funding sources from the federal government are changing a lot of their rules and practices. We're seeing that with the housing, our housing agency, and the funding that we receive as well. We receive community services block grant funding. We receive emergency shelter grant funding, and we're finding that all of those rules and regulations are changing to be a performance-based funding source as well.
Yeah.
So I see that.
SAMHSA is just one, I guess, department of the Health and Human Service Division. So I just don't see, you know, it just being a SAMHSA thing. It is the Health and Human Services where they're looking at whether it's SAMHSA, whether it is other departments that are under Health and Human Services, that they are all working collaboratively in order to ensure that people get the services that they need.
Absolutely.
Well, and you know, more cost efficiently.
Definitely. If we don't have anything else on the ROSCs, can we move on to our next agenda item? Is that okay with everyone?
Sure.
Okay. So the next one is our draft chapter 1 of the plan, History of the Council and the 2010-2011 Biennial Plan. And I know that this is a lot of text to take in, but I wanted to make sure that I was appropriately discussing the ways in which the state of Texas, through our either through efforts of the council or through efforts of the individual state agencies that are represented on the council, how they have been progressing to meeting the recommendations of the council. So I wrote a whole lot, and I fully expect that you guys probably have not had the time to read everything, but I did want to at least state that I'm looking for feedback for your edits and changes as you see fit on both this chapter and the next chapter of the plan that I've drafted. So you can certainly email me those changes, call me and tell me those changes. Does anyone have anything for today in terms of edits to this chapter?
I thought it read very well.
Woohoo! I have received...
There was one factual edit that you wouldn't know about chapter 2, Impacts of the 82nd Legislative Session.
Got it.
I think that was the last one, right? I lose track. Yeah.
Yes.
That was 82. Yeah, 83 is on its way. Okay.
Yes.
Under the DARS Comprehensive Rehab Services,
yes.
Actually, additional funds were appropriated through Title the 107 fund.
Excuse me, please. This is Sherry. And I need to drop off here.
Okay. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me participate.
Thanks, Sherry.
I hope we see a lot more local organizations at the Ross meeting, and I'll send you the invite for the TRI.
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, there was an additional $8,618,000 appropriated to the program to serve a total of 895 individuals. There was a rider. We got an increase in the percentage of 107 funds, and it was just recently verified by the comptroller, the revenue estimate. But
I'm trying to make sure that I don't confuse anything. I had written into the DART section something on HB 442. Is that the same thing that you're talking about? Because
no, what I'm talking about is on page 205. You have DARS Comprehensive Rehab Services was appropriated $17.12 million for SF 2012 to serve 595 consumers, but no additional funds were appropriated to reduce the rating list.
Okay.
Okay. There, right there, is that we were initially appropriated that amount of money.
Uh-huh.
However, additional funds were appropriated to the $8,618,000 to serve a total of 895 consumers. There was a rider in the legislative. It took them all the way till just a month ago to certify the funds. But
okay.
For FY12, it was increased by an additional 8.618.
Okay. And do you by any chance know the number of the rider?
Sure, no, but I'll get it to you.
Okay. That would be great. Thank you. Thank you for that. I do appreciate any updates because, you know, a lot of the data that I was working with and the research that I was working with did come from either December or January. So updates like that, those are good to know. And I guess obviously you guys can have some time to review these two chapters. I wanted to let you know that the chapter one has also been reviewed by the Housing Issues Committee, and I've received a couple of edits by email from their membership that I'm going to include into chapter one, but I just received those recently. But just so you know that the other committee is looking at these documents as well. So that's one thing. Another thing that I wanted to say about these chapters is, you know, I've written a lot here. You have a lot to look at and possibly make changes to. But I guess I also wanted to make sure that there weren't any changes to how the chapter is structured. So the way in which we've created chapter one, for example, is I took the statutory directive, which obviously has not changed, same statutory directive, and then I went into the progress made on our 2010-2011 writing a plan recommendation. And then I speak briefly about the council's activities that occurred during 2011, so it's kind of during our off year where we weren't writing a biennial plan, what were our activities, and that starts on page 13 and goes to page 14 of the document, but talks about our provider capacity survey we did, the financial feasibility case studies, and some of the stuff that's coming up now with the CMS grant with the clearinghouse. So I touched briefly, lightly, on those council activities from 2011 because those activities are actually going to be their own chapters later in the plan. So we're going to have a chapter on the provider capacity survey where I'm taking all of the data I got from that SurveyMonkey and creating, you know, visuals with graphs of the responses that we got from service providers and housing providers and expanding on that the information that we received there. The same thing is going to happen with the financial feasibility case studies. That will be its own chapter in the plan, but it's just briefly highlighted here. Does that sound like a good format for everyone for how we're going to be talking about what we've been doing basically since the last?
Sounds good to me, yeah.
Okay. And then chapter two, that's really straightforward. It's the impacts of the 82nd legislative session. So if there are any impacts to your agency that you feel are relevant to highlight in this chapter because they are somehow relevant to the mission of the council and its statutory obligations, and I haven't included it in chapter two, please let me know. I was really mainly drawing from just what the financial changes were and changes to, you know, any riders and any rearranging of funding from one agency to another agency, such as TDRA has now become an office within TDA, that kind of thing. So that's mostly what I highlighted in Chapter 2, but if there's anything really important about your agency that we should highlight because of the legislative session, please let me know.
Okay.
Okay. So, I guess the next thing in terms of discussion of staff research assignments, just so you all know, you know, right now I'm just trying to start turning out chapters as fast as I can write them. so that's basically where I am is trying to write what we already decided on in terms of the structure of the plan, just trying to write those chapters and fill them in. Are there any research that's based on service issues that we want to discuss at our next conference call in terms of things we want to make policy recommendations on?
I can't think of anything.
Something that we may want to think about, and I'm not necessarily saying that this is, you know, definitive right now, but with so many different forms of case management being done kind of across the continuum of services, if we could support perhaps, crafting some ideas about, you know, how we would want to identify, say, one case manager as, say, the, for lack of a better word, the lead case manager for somebody in services rather than somebody kind of getting a little bit of case management over here and a little bit of case management from that agency and kind of having it sprinkled around. Kind of, I'm not sure exactly how to do that in policy, but I certainly want us to be thinking about that.
Well, actually, the legislature last time tasked the Health and Human Services Commission to look at all case managers, case management type of activities mm-hmm. across the enterprise. So there's a meeting going on right now, there's a task force right now looking at just case management in toto.
Correct.
Okay. That's interesting. And Mark, is that So that group is currently meeting. Do they have anything that they've released for the public?
No. Yeah, I mean, they just started looking at the entire structure. They're doing sort of an inventory now and trying to look at. I mean, there's problems because from CMS, there's a specific definition of what case management means, and that may not exactly jive with some of what the legislature thinks that case management means. So they're just looking at, they're just beginning that process.
Okay. Just beginning. Okay. And I'm assuming the legislature gave them until December or something of that nature?
I don't remember when the due date is for the report, and this may result in a contracting issue to get somebody out there, but they just started meeting maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Okay. Okay. Well, it's good to know that's happening. I'm wondering, given that our time frame for our plan is probably going to be a little bit shorter than any time frame for this task force, do we want to still have a discussion, or do we want to defer to the task force?
I think we're turning in the plan for the next biennium. It might be best just to defer.
Okay.
I just wanted to make sure we got it on our radar.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right. I will. I'll look into the legislation on that task force, so that way I can cite them.
I can send you a contact name as well.
Okay. Thank you. Great. Well, if there's nothing else, our next call is on March 28th, so 2 weeks. And as I said before, I know this is a lot of text to be provided for this call, and it would be very great if you had any time over the next 2 weeks to read those two chapters that were sent out. And please provide me any edits. They can be in track changes if you want to do that, or just submit it in an email, however you want to do them. I welcome any feedback.
Okay, will do. And I'll get you that information on the rider.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And thank you, everyone, for calling in.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.